Welcome to the next episode about business models. So we will continue our exploration of various business models and how they relate to open source licensing and open source community and so on. So let's dive straight into it.
Great.
And now we have one of the models that's grown quite a lot. I mean, I say recently, but I guess over the past 20 years since the IT boom.
That's the internet boom, since the internet boom, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, you as a service or SaaS or whatever you call it. So basically, you make the users pay to use a piece of software. And this piece of software is quite commonly involves FOSS. It might just be running a Linux-based in web browser or web server that people browse to, but even running like a full MongoDB or MySQL or whatnot, and letting users use that service.
But quite commonly, I guess the business model in it is not to use the software; it's more like to get hosting the software costs money for whoever is providing it.
Yes.
So, I mean, of course, if it's some free software, then that's basically the thing. The thing you are making money from is that you charge more for the use of the software than your what you pay to host it.
Yeah. So here again, I think of GitLab, where they combine a lot of those business models, but as a software as a service, they also can host. So GitLab.com, I think, is their offering for people. So we will host this instance for you. It's the same as if you would just take our stuff and host it yourself. But we host it for you. We update it for you. We make sure everything is secure and runs smoothly for you. And you just pay us monthly instead of hiring someone to host it.
And I mean, it's the economy of scale. Just looking at like the FOSS North servers, I guess we use like 2-3% of the CPU power. And if you can make then 50 users use it, you get full utilization of the computer. And then you maybe charge them half of what it would have cost to host the computer themselves and yeah, profit.
Maybe we can do conference sites as a service.
I mean, the controversial thing with this is that it sort of doesn't trigger distribution in at least most copyleft licenses. I mean, you have the Affero GPL that does address this problem. Mm-hmm. But to my knowledge, there is no lesser version of the Affero GPL, so to speak. So it's really strong copyleft or permissive.
Yeah, and it's also not super adopted compared to the other GPLs or the other free software licenses.
Exactly. So I mean, in that way, you can actually take a piece of open source software and harden it or integrate it into your offering and then not share the modifications and sort of run it behind closed doors.
Also, you could just take this software which someone else also offers. So the people who write the software often offer this as a service, but sometimes someone else is much better at hosting it. AWS comes into mind. AWS versus what was it? Some database.
Was it MongoDB? Right?
Yeah, exactly. I think many of those. Where AWS is much, much better at hosting because they are much bigger and they can do it cheaper and more secure and everything. But this takes away money from the project, which would like to take and sell it this service to be able to reinvest back into the open source code, basically. Yeah,
and then becomes a moral question almost. So, I mean, is it nobody's breaking any licenses? It's completely along the rules, but is it okay to use and sort of promote someone else's project, so to speak, or a project developed by an open source community without giving back to it? And I mean, which, we see this.
Which, to be honest, most of the companies just use other people's stuff to make money, basically.
Yeah, but, and that you see that in other business models as well. So I mean, it's not as Daniel Stenberg gets paid by every curl user just because they think it's fun to give him money.
No.
I mean, there's been some controversy around this. So was it MongoDB that was involved in this commons clause? I don't remember which.
One of them was the commons clause. The other one was this server-side public license rights.
Yeah. Mm. That's another lawyer episode for us. So tune in for that. But it's definitely something that where FOSS licensing is being discussed, and I think there will be new licenses or adoption to licenses and so on.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Which then is obviously problematic to when you look at all the, what do you call them, the four...
Freedoms?
Freedoms, exactly. This would impact those freedoms, basically. So it's a problematic topic from a moral standpoint and from a license standpoint and everything.
But let's not get stuck in it. But in my opinion, I think what's missing is like the weak copyleft solution here. So how can you make sure that at least the code contributions and so on are contributed back without sort of get the full strong copyleft, share everything you have?
But that's what AWS is doing. They just take exactly the code as is and they run it on their own servers.
Yeah, but if they make improvements, currently they do not to share it back.
But they don't need to because it's a good product already.
Yeah, and then that falls apart as well.
Exactly.
No, it's an interesting problem, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, we have some examples. AWS is one of them, obviously. Another one is like the Fediverse is largely run as this. So, I mean, I know that you, Gina, you run your own Mastodon.
Yes, exactly.
Server
and my own Matrix servers also.
Yeah, and I couldn't be bothered, so I use technology or mastodon.technology and use someone else's hosting.
Yeah.
It's out there, but there are moral aspects that are that need to be thought about when doing this.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's move on to the next model. Another model is dual licensing. So basically there's a small split here on the right side in the community. So you have a community of users, but you also have a few users that actually pay for getting the same product, but without an open source license. So that they then can either modify it, link statically to it, or they might be concerned about the license itself. I've bumped into this a lot since I'm a Qt user, and they use this model. And I mean, the fun part of it is that the best way to actually get paying customer is to have a very strong copyleft license for the open source stuff.
Yeah.
So that it's hard to build a closed source product around it.
Then everybody wants to pay for getting the ability.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting with Qt, the history behind it, because Qt was completely closed source in the beginning. And then I think even Richard Stallman was involved into convincing the company that dual licensing would be a good way for them forward.
Yeah, they had their own license that wasn't proper open source in very early days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the Stallman involvement. I haven't heard of it myself, but it's probably the case. But they then went to the GPL and dual licensing quite quickly, but not quickly enough because it spawned the GNOME project. So half of our listeners are happy that it happened. I've worked with them since early on it was X11. that was GPL licensed, and then Mac OS 10 came, so OS X, where it was possible to run an X server. So then they opened up the Mac version, and then finally they also opened up the Win32 port and embedded Linux and all of that, and sort of so they gradually shifted in this direction, which makes me think that they actually saw that they gained something business wise by being more open.
Exactly.
I don't have any numbers at all, but I mean, otherwise they would have stopped.
And they are still around, and a lot of companies like where we worked in the automobile industry are using Qt for exactly this reason.
Yeah. And I mean, they also went through another history. So we have a model that we call physical products. So they were owned by Nokia for a while. That didn't really make money from software licenses, which meant that they actually went to weak copyleft. And that, I think, is hampering the money stream a bit compared to having only a strong copyleft, which was the original Trolltech model. Mm-hmm. So it's slightly more complex than just being open. What is it? 26-year-old history now. But yeah, they're alive and kicking. 6.0 will come for Christmas. Yay.
I think we can. I saw the Stallman involvement in on a YouTube video where he explained to some people in the audience why this was a good idea. I think we could link to it later, because it's interesting to see it from Stallman's perspective, where he says it's better to have dual licensing than the software being only closed source or this not open source software or free software. you get the money and you can bring it back into the development of the free software version, basically.
Yeah, we should link to that talk. And we also have a talk about the other half of the puzzle here. So there's a KDE Free Qt Foundation that also guarantees that it since they use a contributions license agreement, which is another episode. So there will be lots of boxes popping up in the corner here on YouTube. but basically, you allow them to relicense your code commercially. But in return, there's also a foundation saying that if they stop providing an open source version of the code within a given time frame, the KDE Free Qt Foundation or whatever it's called,
yeah,
that's another link, can open it up as BSD and basically make something available that both commercial and open source can use. So it's sort of and a very balanced setup.
So I'm not sure about the details there, but there are a lot of things in Qt which are also only proprietary. So would that also be part of this? Do you know?
I think it's a set of models. It was discussed during Academy a couple of weeks back, but we also have the talk by Adrian de Groot. Sorry for your name, man. I completely butchered it. We can put some links in there. But it's kind of interesting because you do a CLA, they have the dual licensing, so it's both commercial and open source, and you have then sort of the other half of the CLA, so to speak, or the community agreement, that the community can also open it. So it's a guarantee both ways. So it's a very interesting setup.
Absolutely.
I'm sure there are more dual licensing examples, but we've been stuck with Qt, and that's the one that comes to mind to me.
I've dual licensed stuff also. I don't even remember what, but I had some something. I didn't do it. So there's also dual licensing in different open source licenses. So that's what I've been doing, because some licenses don't allow you to be pulled in into projects. So I think we've been talking about that, that you cannot use a MIT license in a GPL project or something like that. And so their dual licensing was necessary, basically.
Oh, okay. Dual licensing between. Yeah, cool.
So it's not related to a business model, but still dual licensing.
So the next model is quite fun. It's the no model. I think it's very common to start from here. Everything starts from something small. You have startup-based open source projects as well that might not come from this route, but a lot of the classical open source projects that build from an itch that somebody scratches for themselves come from here. And
absolutely.
This basically means no model. You might be paid to work on it. You might not be paid to work on it. You might work on something completely different. But it's important not to forget this. There are no customers or no supplier-customer relationship. There is a user developer relationship that might be very rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there are no guarantees in either direction. I really like this scratch your own itch because that's what it's about. You don't solve a problem for someone else. You write it because you want to write it. So I added satisfy pleasure because sometimes it's just fun to do something even though it's not itching. But there's no real point in writing it. And the same goes for the user. They use it because they like it, not because they buy
it. Or because it satisfies some need. I mean,
exactly.
Even partially.
You could have no model, but still be a successful and sort of important project, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, the Linux kernel would probably fit in here. At least from the very beginning, there is still no business model around the Linux kernel.
And I suppose the GNU project as well is a similar thing.
Yeah.
You just want an OS.
Exactly. And the example I mentioned here, because there are so many, but we referred to one of them in the degrees of openness session we did a while back, and it's the X screensaver, which is written by a guy who has a nightclub somewhere in the US, and he provides a tarball, and you can always email him if you have a problem. And he doesn't want more. He thinks it's a fun project to write, and that's what he does.
So we've been working at Pelagico, and I feel that there we scratched a lot of itches inside of the company, where we then felt that this will never be able to be used to extract money from other companies, but it's useful for us in the next project. So let's open source it, and so I think it's one of those. Scratch your own itch, and then suddenly other people are using it. I remember Jonathan writing some small example software, which then the customer took and made open source. And then he saw it sometime later in some completely different setting, basically, which was kind of fun. So sometimes it's just has its own life later on once you open source it.
Yeah, and just speaking from my own experience, I don't write that much code at work anymore, but I still like writing code. So this is I do small games that probably not even I will play in a month's time, but it's so fun to create them.
Yes, yes.
So it's and opening them then. Just to, there's no point in keeping them closed, and hopefully someone can learn from them.
Exactly.
It just makes sense.
I just wrote a new piece of software a couple of days ago because we've been doing it at work, and I knew that in new projects which I will be involved in, we will need exactly the same thing. And I already kind of know everything in my mind what needs to be done there, so it was easy for me to just write it down in code. It's a different project, but obviously influenced by what I've been doing at work, and it will hopefully help a lot of people.
So basically taking all the architectural experience,
exactly,
and
yeah.
Sort of you know where the rough corners are.
Exactly.
But I think it's very important to remember this no model when discussing other business models. That this is I have no measurement, but I would imagine that a majority of the software at least started as this. They might be packaged by someone else, but it's probably written without a business model around it from the start.
The majority of open source projects, you mean?
Yeah, and I sit in front of a Linux machine, so yeah. The software on this one, but yes.
Yeah, because I think most of the applications for Windows, I don't think they started like that.
No, of course.
Yeah.
No, you're right. So that's the last of the business model episodes. So thank you for listening. As always, we're on foss-north.se/pod for the pod listeners or in your favorite pod player. We're also on conf.tube, which is a PeerTube instance, and on YouTube. So if you're on one of those, we appreciate your likes and subscribes and comments. For the pod listeners, you can always reach us via mail that you find on the homepage. See ya.
See ya.